Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
And good evening to you, Ben. Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone. Indeed, as ever, our email address for any questions, queries or comments you may have. You can write to us anytime. astronomy@dublincityfm.ie is the email address. And the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. We're also live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also available as a podcast. Let's get straight into it, John, as usual. Lots to get through. And shall we start with the planet? Well, we start with the night sky.
The usual stuff. Yeah, the International Space Station has just disappeared from our sight in evening skies a few days ago. But beware, it's coming back March the 14th until March the 28th, when you'll get to see it in the evening skies, making quick passes, slow passes, long passes, medium passes, everything that you need, low ones and high ones and everything else. But we'll tell you a little bit more about that as time goes on. But Mercury is virtually out of sight, very low in the glow of sunrise at the moment. It's not worth looking towards. Venus minus 3.9 shines low in the southeast during dawn, and it gets a little lower every morning, so it's disappearing as well out of our skies. Mars coming the other way at us, plus 1.3. It remains deep in the sunrise at the moment, but it will creep back in over the next couple of months. Jupiter, magnitude minus 2.3. It's in Aries. That's the one you see first high in the sky. And it's that very bright white dot, very high in the south-southwest at nightfall, which is, yep, we're in nightfall at the moment, and lower in the southeast, southwest later. It sets by midnight, so you've got to catch it earlier. And in a telescope, Jupiter has shrunk to only 39 arc seconds wide, so it's shrinking, but still very visible in the sky. Saturn, on the other hand, magnitude plus 1.0. It's in Aquarius. It glimmers very low in the west, southwest in twilight, and it sets barely after twilight's end, so it's not so good for looking at. And the pun there, I suppose, is good luck if you can find it. So always interesting to see Saturn. Uranus and Neptune, they're the little fellas that are quite hard to see. 5.7, 7.9 in the scales. Uranus remains lurking in the darkness 11 degrees east of Jupiter. So you will get to see the vicinity of where Uranus might be if you have a telescope. You want to have a little wander in the skies. Neptune, magnitude 7.9, is low in the west, southwest, just after dark. I think they're worth having a punt at, really, aren't they?
Try and find them?
Yeah.
Well, of course, if you have a go-to on your telescope, you'll...
Okay. Well, I don't, unfortunately.
Oh, it's one of the apps that show you, but you should... Yeah, you'll see Uranus with...
I have
in a very dark sky, yeah. Or with... You should see with no problem with a pair of binoculars. They don't even, wouldn't even have to be a particularly powerful pair of binoculars to see Uranus. As you mentioned, it's at magnitude 5.7. Dim, but...
Yeah,
not impossible. And if you had a telescope, you'll see that it is a planet. You'll see a disc. So unlike the stars, which are all so far away, all you see is a point of light.
Yep.
Meanwhile, of course, we have the moon and the sun, and the moon at the moment is a 14% waning crescent moon. We cannot see it from our location here in Dublin at the moment. But it will rise in the early hours of tomorrow, actually about 12 minutes past 7 here in Dublin. And by that time, it will have shrunk to 10% phase. And when it's due south, just after 10:15 tomorrow morning, it'll have shrunk another percentage or so. And by the time it sets tomorrow at 1:23 p.m. in the afternoon, You'll see an you'll only be able to see 8.5% of the face of the moon that's facing us. So it's getting smaller and smaller as we head towards the new moon, which will be on Friday the 9th at 11 p.m. And we have the sun rising tomorrow in Dublin at 7:59 a.m., which is a whole 13 minutes earlier than a week ago. And when it passes the meridian in Dublin, it'll be 12:39 p.m. And when it sets, that's at 5:19 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, which is 14 minutes later than it did a week ago. And the other twilights are also 12 to 13 minutes later than a week ago. As I mentioned, the sun will set at 5:19 p.m. And from then we'll have civil twilight until just about 5 to 6 tomorrow evening. And then nautical twilight until 6:37 p.m. And then astronomical twilight until 7:18 p.m. And after that, of course, it's officially nighttime. That means there will be 26 minutes more daylight than we had a week ago. And tomorrow, another 3 minutes and 47 seconds more daylight. So what does that mean? Between, with regard to sunrise and sunset, there will be 9 hours and 19 minutes between sunrise and sunset. By the way, tomorrow morning, the 7th in the morning, pointer for Venus. You mentioned it's getting more difficult to see, John. As you mentioned, it is sinking in the southeast in the mornings. But it will be that bright object, 8.5 degrees to the upper left of the very low moon. As I say, we're creeping towards new moon, so moon is getting nearer and nearer to the sun. And in, as from our vantage point, that is, of course. And on Saturday the 10th, well, two things. Chinese New Year. Do you know which year it is? You know the cycles every... is it 18?
Is it the rat?
Not this time. It's the year of the dragon.
Uh-huh.
And here, speaking of the moon, here's a little lunar challenge for you. Try to spot the moon, the crescent moon low in the southwest when it's only 18 and a half hours old after the new moon. So Saturday morning... yeah, that'll be...
I think really we see...
rather, Saturday evening, I should say, because it'll be past, it'll be a waxing crescent, and it'll be just just 18 and a half hours past the new moon. So there's a...
a challenge.
There's a challenge. It shouldn't be too difficult. Anyway, 18 and a half hour old crescent moon, low in the southwest, early twilight. And then Sunday the 11th, actually, is International Day of Women and Girls in Science. And in the afternoon, Saturn is that object that's 6 degrees above the waxing crescent moon. And, why shouldn't there be International Day of Women and Girls? I was just thinking about this when I read this or found this out. There's very little, you know, we know a lot about men in science, but there's very little... I suppose traditionally they didn't go into it. But even if you go back to the time of Herschel's time, his sister Caroline was really a co-discoverer of Uranus. And she did discover a lot of comets on her own. And she did take a lot of scientific notation with her brother. And then, of course, more recent, Dame Jocelyn Bell Burnell, for a start, who discovered pulsars when she was a PhD student. But unfortunately, the great injustice there, of course, was her professor in the university got the Nobel Prize, even though she was the one that discovered it. And then, of course, there's lots of Marie Curie, for example, and many, many more besides.
Yeah, and just a reminder of something exciting to look forward to is the Irish Astronomy Week from March the 9th until March the 16th, 2024. And you'll get to see amazing images from our universe, from the solar system to distant galaxies, even the echoes from the Big Bang that formed part of a huge series of free public events happening from March the 9th to the 16th. So that's giving you a fair good warning for that. and as part of the second Irish Astronomy Week. And the theme for this year is entitled From Your Garden to the Stars. I'm not sure where all of these are taking place, but there's too much information,
around the country. Yeah. Practically every library in the country. We'll have Rona Newman on the phone in a couple of weeks' time telling us a bit about them. And hopefully I'll get someone in from the Irish Astronomical Society as well about some of the talks they're giving in various locations around the country.
Yep.
If you look at that website, what's it?
Irish Astronomy Week.ie, with of course the three W's in front.
Yeah, you shouldn't be too far from an event. There are lots and lots around the country during that
week. And of course there'll be some large telescopes trained and all sorts of things like Jupiter. Mercury, if it can be seen, it's a difficult one to see. But you know, the people who get up in the morning, the people who like to be in the evening time. And, of course, some of the brilliant things that we often escape to look at are the surface features of our moon. Just a pity we can't get a little bit closer to see where all the landing things and landers are. It's just too far away, even with the largest telescopes. But the reconnaissance orbiter and things send back some fantastic photographs. So that date, the date's again, 9th to the 16th of March 2024, which is not too far away.
Thank you, John. We'll talk about for a moment, a couple of things happening on the ISS. There was a resupply ship with four tons of material sent up. Oxygen, food,
All sorts of
clean
stuff.
Socks, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some water and oxygen and such like. But actually, speaking of oxygen, they are also going to have the first metal 3D printer on the International Space Station. Now, most of us are to some degree familiar with 3D printers. You see them in a lot of libraries now. Of course, the ones we're used to build things with plastic. But this is metal. And this metal is going to have a much higher melting temperature than the plastic. So they're going to have to be more careful, but it's going to be in its own particular type of glove box where the atmosphere will be, the oxygen will be poured from the atmosphere in the glove box and replaced with nitrogen. But the metal is going to be melted using a laser. It's a big printer, actually. It's going to weigh 180 kilograms. And it's going to be kept in the Columbus module, which is the European Space Agency model module on the International Space Station. And it's going to use stainless steel, which is going to melt at about 1400 degrees centigrade. That's why they're putting it in a sealed box to prevent heat or fumes from reaching the crew. And of course, the plan is then, well, in the longer term, that you won't have to bring a spare everything with you if you have the design plan. Of course, you can get that sent up from, fax to you or email to you on the International Space Station. And if you have the raw materials, then you can make a new metal printout of whatever it is you need. If it's a 6 mil spanner or a part for a machine or an instrument. So
it's a remarkable machine. I can see a photograph of it here. How it works, I don't know. I do understand the technology of the plastic sort of units, and I've seen the early ones because I have friends who have kids who have invested anything from €150 to €300 or €400 and even more. And in fact, I had the spanner. Remember the spanner that was made for me?
And
it works. It's a thing, so it was quite interesting to see. And the newer printers now will build up if they dip the into a resin material, and then they just dip it, print, and then take it out as they do it. So if you have, for example, which I saw the example of the Notre Dame church, Eglise, whatever you want to call it, in Paris. And if you look through it, it's absolutely spot on dimensionally. You can see from one through the other. And this is in one of the resin ones. So technology has come such a way that we can now do it in 3D metal, which is pretty darn good.
And it's all part of how they hope to create circular space economy. It's all got to do with the circular economy, isn't it? Just reuse, reduce.
And recycle.
And recycle. Yep, thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032.
Now, it was mentioned in passing over the last week or two with the expectation of seeing an asteroid making its closest pass to the Earth in more than a century. I think people are expecting to see this just in the evening skies, just whizzing across our skies between us and the moon, maybe, for example, which maybe they were. And this one is known as 2008 OST, and it won't make an appearance again for another 200 years, said the officials last Thursday. Scientists say there is no danger in its passing, and the reason for that is because it's a mere 1.7 million miles from us here. And it's was discovered in, I think, 2007. It's just 2007 into 8, named 2008 OS7. It's a big fella. It's 900 feet across, and when it speeds by Earth, as it did just on Friday, and of course you and I wouldn't be able to see it, I don't think, and it was travelling at 41,000 miles per hour. Now, there were live streams all over the place to see this, but you have to have some pretty good equipment. So, as we know, asteroids are left over from the formation of the solar system, which scientists say began about 4.6 billion years ago. Now, was that just less than 4.6 billion years ago? Was it more than 4.6 billion years ago? By a day or two, a year or two, or what? It's really, it's sort of, so far it just doesn't make sense when this big cloud of gas and dust collapsed. And scientists say that, or have said that when this occurred, most of the material fell to the center of the cloud and formed the sun. And some of the dust in the cloud became the planets. So it's still ongoing as to who, why, where, what and when of the universe. And you and I were talking about, as you go further out, is it because of the gravitational pull that things seem to slow down out there?
Oh, this is where it's recently been discovered that some of the stars on the outer edges and outer spiral arms of galaxies are not traveling as fast as first thought. And this is where dark matter comes into it, because we know the galaxies are rotating, and apparently without some extra mass causing some gravitational force, this mass that we can't see, the galaxies would have, during their rotation, would have basically flung themselves apart. So the idea or the concept of dark matter was invented, for want of a better word, to explain this. But now it seems that some of the stars, as I mentioned, at the outer edges of the galaxies are traveling a bit slower, and therefore, of course, that then asks, well, where's this? How do you explain that? Dark matter doesn't seem to be as much dark matter there that would explain that, as they thought there was, and that it's not evenly, the dark matter that is there is not evenly distributed throughout the galaxy. Of course, it's still all a hypothesis, because by its very nature we don't know what dark matter is. It's just, its presence seems to explain a lot of things, but we haven't discovered what it's made of. Again, more it comes down to particle physics too, and the idea of this dark matter, what they call WIMPs, weakly interacting.
Yeah,
well, I've forgotten what that's a weakly interacting massive particles. So basically, they're particles, they're matter, they're stuff, and by the very nature, like every piece of matter that we know of in the universe, causes has a gravitational attraction. The more massive it is, the more massive, the bigger the gravitational pull. And but these seem to be big, but don't interact with matter around us. So
that's really
they
strange.
Could be. It's kind of like, well, not like neutrinos. We know about neutrinos, and we've proved that they exist, and they have next to no mass. And there's
billions
and billions of them going through your head at this very second.
It's really
strange. From the ones from the sun.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you described it well as stuff. I think we leave it
stuff.
As
just stuff matter,
it's
yeah.
Just stuff.
Yeah. That's the technical term for it. Stuff.
Now, speaking about, say, the sun and neutrinos and things like that, solar maximum is on its way. And of course we know this. We know this because every 11 years it sort of its insides and outside catch up with itself, and it produces all sorts of flares and things like that. But seemingly we're not going to know when it's going to occur. But they reckon that they won't know it's happened until 7 months after it's over, when they do a few calculations. So the sun has been gradually gaining strength as it nears its highest rate of activity, which is known in our language as solar maximum, and during its approximate 11-year solar cycle. And the solar cycle, to describe it, is a period of solar activity driven by the sun's magnetic field and indicated by the frequency and intensity of sunspots visible on the surface. And we know this because we've seen a lot of photographs with massive solar sunspots, as we call them, and throwing debris and stuff like that at maybe 400,000 kilometers per hour out into our direction and every other direction in the way of the sun, I suppose. So they're not going to be able to tell this whether it's until it's at least 7 months after the fact. And why is this the case? That's the question. So this maximum is computed as a convention with the 13-month smooth sunspot number, which means that for each month you use the value of 6 months, and 6 months before and 6 months after, that is. So there's a way of calculating this. So they reckon, and if we hear first, we'll tell you first if we can get that. So over the next coming years and plus 7 months, I think thereabouts, they'll be exactly able to tell us when solar maximum did occur. And
That's because it's not linear, the number of sunspots.
No.
They come and go, but as you mentioned, as we come to the maximum, there's more and more of them. So it's only after the peak.
Yep.
When it's on the way down, you realize, it's not going back up again.
Oh.
We've reached maximum.
Yeah, well, they reckon
maximum.
Let's say that it happened in February of this year, scientists would need a sunspot number data from the previous 6 months. From the month of February 24, which we're in at the moment, and the next 6 months, which would take us to August 2024. So they're going 6 months before, 6 months after. They take a couple of calculations, and they wait until September 2024 before they'd be able to definitively declare that solar maximum had occurred in February 2024. So it hasn't done that, but that's just an example of the way that they calculate these things. Which is terribly interesting as well.
I see, John, that if something we've covered, of course, before in the past, the asteroid Bennu and the samples that have come back after the 7-year-long voyage to the asteroid, collect some samples, brought them back to Earth, back the capsule landed back in September of September 24th of last year, when it canister was parachuted into the Utah desert, and this now they're examining them, and this part's gone to different laboratories around the world, and I see that some of the pieces have gone to the University of Arizona, and they have received 200 milligrams, that's 0.2 of a gram, or if you're dealing in old money, that's around 0.007 of an ounce. They say they have 1,000 particles that are greater than a half a millimeter, 28 particles that are greater than a centimeter, and the biggest particle they have is 3.5 centimeters, which is, that's a nice bit of a pebble. All right, so they're going to look at that, and hopefully, of course, the plan is, it's seems to be a pristine sample of the remnants of when the solar system formed, as you correctly mentioned, 4.5 billion years ago. So they're going to be studying that for those samples for many, a long time. Yeah. They seem to, and they're saying they have a phosphate crust, and they think that it may have been part of some, got to do with maybe even a part of an ocean on a, on a, I think that's a bit far-fetched, though, on an old world or planet, that because there's a lot of phosphates apparently in there, encrusted on there, the rocks and stones you find in the seas here.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
there's a lot still to be teased out for sure.
Yeah, a couple of messages in from good old Alan down in Kildare. He'd like to know if we're happy with the new time slot. Of course we are. We don't mind when we do it. Of course it's brought in loads of new listeners. Mark from his traffic programs nearly straight into us here as well. Last week we had a few texts indeed. His tea's getting cold. Great show. Clear here. Good night, Ben and Johnny. Ice cool, guys. There you go.
Mr. Cool.
Mr. That's it. That's the way. We definitely have a fan. Now, just before we head off, and reflectors in space.
Ah, yes.
This is the thing that caught my attention earlier on today, actually. Now, it's been around for a couple of days now at this stage. And they're saying now the reflectors in space could make solar farms on Earth work for longer every day. Now, this makes total sense. If they can reflect around the world, because it's dark here now, so if they're something out into... whether they have to go out to geostationary or not, or flash them to each other, I don't know.
No, I'm thinking that if you think about the International Space Station, when you see it over, you generally can see it not long after sunset or not too long before sunrise, when it's getting dark here. So I think if for those times of the day, if you had these huge mirrors that was reflect sunlight, just like the solar panels on the International Space Station, and then you aim that light precisely where the big solar farms are.
Mm.
So before the sun comes up, you would be basically using a mirror to reflect sunlight onto the solar farms before dawn and just after sunset to keep them working longer.
Now, if you were around in February the 5th, 1993...
I was.
Yes, we both were. There was a chance that you could have seen a dim flash of light. That flash came from the Russian space mirror experiment called Zanmya 2. It's not really a Russian word, that, is it? Doesn't sound like it. It was a 20-meter reflective structure, much like the aluminium foil, which means banner in Russian. It unfurled from a spacecraft that had just undocked from the Mir space station. We all remember that, too. And its goal was to demonstrate solar energy could be reflected from space to Earth. So this is February the 6th, so 1993. That's a good long time ago. So they're opening the subject again as to whether they can beam light back down onto a lot of solar panel farms down here on roofs and factories and fields. And imagine the middle of the Sahara with a load of solar panels. That'll be something else to see as well. So that's the experiments that they're doing just at the moment anyway. Unfortunately, that is it for this evening.
Thank you, John, for that. Yes, that's all the time we have this evening, unfortunately. But you can write to us anytime. astronomy@dublincityfm.ie is the email address. Thanks to John for his news items and for driving the sound desk. And thanks to the people who put this show up as a podcast, and of course to James Sweeney and Conor Lennon for they put it up on astronomy.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of the Astronomy Show. And now it's music all the way here on 103.2 Dublin City FM, because it's up next it's Bren Linnet with Threads, and then from 10 p.m. to midnight we've Nigel Woods, Far Ear to the Globe, and that's his mix of world music. And at midnight to 2 a.m., Dave Barry's After Hours mix of jazz, blues, and soul. So please join myself, John, at the same time next week at 7:30 p.m. when we'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening, and say good night, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John. And all that is now.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.